Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com, and this is your co-host, Scott Drawn, and Andrew Craig. And Andrew, as you often do, you've arranged for us to talk to a fascinating guest, a celebrity story, celebrity author with a very high-profile story. Why don't you introduce him to our audience, and we'll find out more.
Well, I'm proud to introduce Dr. Peter Janney, a psychologist reared among Washington's elite, in a family of a high-ranking CIA official, who undertook a decades-long effort to solve one of the nation's most important murder mysteries. The result is his new book, Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for a World Peace. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you today, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is just not routine. I'd say it's a genuine honor to host you because your fascinating book is very well-crafted, entertaining, courageous, and, of course, important. And it's all the more a privilege to share with you on our show your message in that it's been hard getting it out, given the fact that this is important and it's just an amazing story. Why don't you summarize who you are and why you approached this and what your findings were?
Well, let's see. I'll do my best and to keep your audience enticed here. I grew up in Washington in the 1950s and 1960s. I was a baby boomer. My father had been a very highly decorated naval aviator in World War II. And like many of his friends and colleagues, when they came back from the war, I think a lot of them, particularly the ones that were quite aristocratic and really didn't have to worry too much about money, they wanted to do something for their country. And the creation of the Central Intelligence Agency in 1947 offered sort of a new, very intriguing kind of opportunity for many of these very bright, Ivy League, well-educated men who, had come out of families that were captains of industry and other, various well-to-do businesses. And they wanted to do a little something different. And I think this is what attracted a lot of the early people to the CIA's mission. I mean, no one wanted to see another world war because the next one, obviously, was going to include some kind of nuclear event, and that was just unthinkable at the time.
Well, to interrupt for a brief moment, your best friend belonged to the Cord and Mary Meyer family, and one of the just amazing coincidences, but it's all too true, is that Cord Meyer was one of the world's leading advocates in the United States for world peace.
That's right. When Cord emerged from World War II, he really came back, I think, very dedicated to wanting to create some kind of government structure that would keep the world peace. And he had a willing compatriot partner in Mary Pinchot Meyer, who was an avowed pacifist and had been all of her life. And she knew Cord. They knew each other before he went to war, but they weren't dating. It was upon Cord's return after his being wounded on Guam. He came back. He had lost an eye. And I think he really found, a kind of true-to-life soulmate in Mary Meyer. And these two sort of became the world post-World War II peace couple. And Cord, for several years, just was tirelessly traveling around the country, proclamating the United World Federalist Movement.
And can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
To say that here he is winning one of the top prizes Yale, a best-selling author, and what you described. And when I was reading your book, I called a friend of mine who's discouraged about not finding a job in today's economy, and I said, look at this guy. He couldn't get a job. And so what did he do?
He joined the CIA.
Right? At a very high level.
Yes. Court's father knew Alan Dulles, and Alan Dulles, I think, was already apprised of some of Cord's talents. So Alan Dulles had, you know, was able to seduce a lot of young idealistic men into the agency, and Cord happened to be one of them. Although it's clear from what I wrote in the book that, it wasn't Cord's first choice to go to the CIA. I think he was hoping for some kind of academic appointment. He had been a Lowell Fellow at Harvard, which is the highest academic distinction you can get at Harvard, and of course he was very bright, very well thought of, but whatever academic appointment was available did not materialize. So I think in the fall of 1952, Cord showed up for work at the East Street building of the Central Intelligence Agency when it was downtown.
And one of his jobs was Operation Mockingbird, which was, how would you summarize that?
Well, I would, Mockingbird was a program instituted by the agency to, in a sense, place propaganda into the news media and to do whatever it could to slant public opinion in a particular direction so that using that kind of propaganda support, which was often had a lot to do, was fear-based, you know, in a sense scaring the population about communism or one thing or after another. It gave the CIA a kind of credibility to do certain things it might normally have a little more difficulty
and,
with.
And we now know about this through many declassified memos, books, and so forth, and he was head of it and working with people like Ben Bradley at the Washington Post.
Correct.
And that's all in your book. So moving ahead, she, they divorce after you become best friends of their son.
Yes, I was best friends with their son, Michael, their middle child, who was accidentally hit by a car and killed in December of 1956 when we were both 9 years old. I wasn't with him. But this really became a seminal event in my own life, you know, really introducing to me the reality of death and what that meant.
And you found his mother to be extraordinary, warm and gracious and so forth, correct?
Correct. Mary was a very unique person and an extraordinary woman. I mean, not only physically beautiful to behold in the classical sense, but she was just a highly individuated, well-grounded person who, you know, really had her wits about her and was very clear about, you know, what her own destiny was and what she wanted to do. And this was really, you know, quite rare back in the 1950s for women.
Well, her first, one of her first professional efforts was at age 19, as you point out, having a poem published by the New York Times.
That's right.
Well, why did she divorce? And let's then fast forward to.
Well, I think she and Cord, I think it really, let's go back. After the World Federalist Movement, where Mary had really been Cord's right-hand person, his colleague, his partner, you know, Cord's venture into the CIA meant that he was working in highly classified matters that he couldn't share with her. And I think Mary probably was figuring out just how ruthless some of these adventures were. And, of course, she objected. and there were increasing vociferous disagreements fueled by alcohol on Cord's part. And Mary was very clear about her disdain for Alan Dulles and what the Central Intelligence Agency was doing, and quite outspoken about it in various social circles. So she wasn't a popular person with other CIA wives or CIA men. And I think the combination of that, and just along with the death of their child, Michael, I think that just really drove a wedge between the two of them. And it was actually Mary who initiated the separation in 1957.
Well, we're coming up on our break, and I'm so glad we have you with us for another
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. This is a fascinating story. When we come back, we're going to learn more about Mary and the White House years and what happens next. So stay with us, mytechnologylawyer.com. Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com. This is your co-host, Scott Drawn and Andrew Craig, and we're talking with Peter Janey, author of the terrific new book entitled Mary's Mosaic.
Well, Peter, we were left off just as she's moved to Georgetown, and President Kennedy has gone to begin Camelot with his beautiful wife, Jacqueline Kennedy. And they start an affair, but we've only got 7 minutes to take us through why this affair was unusual and what its implications were, her murder, his murder, and why you have to write about this because no one else will. So let's start with, about 40 seconds apiece on that. Why was this affair unusual and yet totally unknown?
I'll attempt to answer that. You have to remember that these two met in the winter of 1936. She was 15 years old. He had just graduated from the Choate School in Connecticut and had come back, even though he was technically a freshman at Princeton at that time, he had come back to the Choate Winter's Festivities weekend. And that's where they met. And he was quite spellbound by her. She didn't really take to him because she figured he was just one of the wealthy playboy types, which he was. But they always kept in touch. They kept seeing each other socially. And, of course, there's a big spark-up when JFK is at the UN conference in San Francisco in 1945, and so is Cord Meyer. Although Cord and Mary are already married then, JFK wants to, move in a little bit closer, and he and Cord have a little testosterone skirmish there. But after the divorce, they connect, and she meets him in the White House in the fall of late 1960, and that's when the affair starts to take shape.
60 or 61?
That's right.
61 or
60? 60, fall of 60, after the election.
Wow, that's early on.
Yes.
And to fast forward, because... Boy, we'll have to have you back one of these days. Fast forward, you say it's totally documented that they met at least 15 times and probably 30, correct?
Correct.
Do I have my numbers off?
Yeah, that's about right. And those documents are, the White House Secret Service logs.
Yeah. So they were having both a romantic affair, but she also... came to formal dinners and with her sister, Ben Bradley's wife, and ostensibly were just social friends seated at the right hand of the president at least one occasion.
Correct.
Sitting in on formal meetings.
Well, that came a little bit later because I think JFK really realized that not only was Mary just an incredibly beautiful woman, she was very smart and very perceptive, and she had no trouble challenging him or calling him on certain things and basically saying, why are you doing this? You know, you're just taking us closer to more trouble. And this really came to a head at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 62. You know, I think that was, as one other author claimed it to be, the most dangerous moment in all of human history. And
we're talking, of course, with Peter Janney, author of Mary's Mosaic, a terrific new book. So he's assassinated, and it's your contention that this was not just Lee Harvey Oswald, but coming from a CIA family and doing 35 years of research on this, you believe it was a...
Well, I've never seen any convincing research or evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald fired a gun that day. I mean, I think Lee Harvey Oswald was honest when he said, I'm just a patsy. And given all the things that we know now that's come out of citizens taking on the role of researchers in terms of getting to the bottom of this, because our government clearly is avoiding it, it's clear to me that there was a massive conspiracy to take out JFK, because he was fast becoming his own man, and he wasn't going to bow down to the Pentagon, to the CIA, or any other part of the national security apparatus.
And it's part of your argument in the book, pardon me for synopsizing, a wonderful 548-page book, that he planned to dump Lyndon Johnson, and after re-election and exit from office, you believe Mary Meyer. But all of that came to an end in Dallas. The Warren Commission report came out in September of 1964. Then what happened? And we've only got about 90 seconds.
Well, what happened was, all through 1964, Mary started asking questions. And she had the kind of connections and influence that allowed her to talk to very high up people. One of them, particularly Kenny O'Donnell, JFK's principal advisor, who in a sense told Mary what he told Tip O'Neill, that the shots came from the front and to the and the right of the motorcade, and that was what actually killed President Kennedy, not shot.
And of course, her brother-in-law was Ben Bradley of Newsweek and the Washington Post, and she was very popular and well-known in all of these circles. And let's talk about the murder. She goes out on the National Park adjoining the Potomac River, is killed.
The CNO Towpath Canal.
Yes. A black man is indicted, but somehow acquitted.
Well, he was acquitted very easily because there wasn't a shred of forensic evidence linking him to the crime scene or her body.
Okay, last part. Many researchers, well, nobody knew about this until the National Enquirer in 1976 broke the story.
Correct.
At an affair. But until your book, people have largely shied away from connecting all the dots. And even you, having done it and sent copies of your book to every member of Congress and the Justice Department.
Judiciary Committee.
Judiciary Committee, find it hard to get on the air. Or coverage, aside from some nice coverage in your region of Boston. Why is that?
That's the question, isn't it? And I think that there's a real effort to, as much as possible, ignore this book, although Publishers Weekly is finally coming out with a review of the book in the next week or 10 days, I've been told. But the New York Times avoided it. Of course, all the Washington news media outlets, except for you, Andrew, have avoided it. And I think it's really because it casts some very considerable doubt on the official story.
Well, you're very courageous no matter what anybody thinks of it, because people have died on this. I've sorry, Scott, I've used up all the time here, but I'll leave it to you to conclude or toss in a short one.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to have Peter come back and spend a little more time with us on this fascinating story.
I'd love to.
And, you know, maybe we can help a little bit in terms of giving some visibility to the book and getting it out there in our listening audience. We have a lot of people who listen to the show in Washington, D.C., but also around the country. And they care about issues like this. So thank you for spending time on it, and we'll have to get you back.